Good morning. I am so excited to be here with Dr. Mar Gee. Good morning.
I know you've been working on how to say my name, Margie. So good morning. Good to see you too, Lisa.
I did a good job, as I have a lot of hard jobs when I'm filming. So one of the things that I'm so excited to share with everyone who's listening to us is I have a new book. So my book is Bravish, One Breakup, Six Continents, and Feeling Fearless After 50. And the first of your books that I found was called Brave, and it talks about 50 acts of courage. And I really appreciate, I know that you have 7 books now, but I appreciate in all of your books how you're really talking about the importance of courageous conversation and courageous acts. So you could tell people a little bit about how this started. I know you came from Australia, you've lived around the world, you've raised a lot of children, you've done so many impressive things, but what made you focus on bravery and courage?
Well, Lisa, I grew up on a dairy farm in the Aussie bush, and I had very limited horizons. My parents both left school at 16, and most people actually where I grew up still live where I grew up, or many do, and but I just knew I wanted to expand my own horizon, and that required an act of courage in its own way, overcoming all my own doubts and fears of have I got what it takes? Am I good enough? And I set off and, moved 4 hours away to go to university. And I feel like I have been living outside my comfort zone for much of the time since, which was quite a few decades ago. So I also have traveled around the world a lot, as you said, and, one of the things that struck me the most as I've met people across so many different countries and cultures and lived in some of them for a period of time myself is that as humans, we're so often held back by our fear of failure, of not having what it takes, of not being good enough, of being exposed as inadequate or unworthy or unlovable in some way. And so courage to me, in how I think of it, it's not the absence of self-doubt or misgivings or being afraid of being found out. It is just deciding that something more important lays at stake and being willing to quote Susan Jeffers, feel our fear and move forward anyway. And so, even writing my first book many years ago, I had 4 kids who were age 7 and under at the time, which was an act of courage. It was like, I've never studied writing. I've never, I don't know where all the apostrophes go, et cetera, but I feel really called to do this. So really if I look back on my whole life story, so much of it has been me practicing walking the path of courage over fear in so many different ways.
Yes. And I know for myself, when I was leaving my marriage, people kept saying to me that I was brave. And I kept looking the word up in the dictionary because I did not feel brave. I felt anything but brave. And it is, I actually really appreciated in your book talking about the doing things anyway and trying to figure out the life that you want to have. And I know in the book you have 50 courageous acts. So how did that come about? What inspired all of those 50 courageous acts?
Well, in my book Brave, which was my third book, I found the reason that book came about, I'd written 2 books at that point, Find Your Courage and Stop Playing Safe. And a lot of people said, fantastic, very helpful, but how do I actually do some of these things? How do I say no to someone? Because I hate letting people down. I'm a bona fide people pleaser. How do I give someone feedback? How do I set a vision? How do I deal with rejection? How do I pick myself up when I've had a fall? And so 50 brave, 50 acts of everyday acts of courage came about because sometimes we want to be brave, but we just don't know how to be brave. And so that book was very much inspired by that. And 50 is the number of different ways that I could readily sort of categorize different ways we can be brave.
I love that because in my book, I did 50 things before I turned 50. And I know in your book, you've got this, you talked about for your husband's 50th birthday, your whole family went climbing together. And that was very courageous and full of challenges. Can you talk to people a little bit about how did that happen, that you'd made this family choice to do something courageous together?
Yeah, well, trying to think of the long story, the short version of it, and the medium size. Ironically enough, little humor here, on his 49th birthday, I knew it was the next day. I remember the day before, I knew it was his birthday the next day. But on the actual day, life was busy. I was working away. He was off at his work. We often speak to each other throughout the day. It was like a quick call. We spoke like 4 or 5 times. I just forgot it was his birthday. And finally, my daughter arrives home from high school, and she walks in the door and says, it's like, you know, about 4 o'clock or something, and said, "Hey, Mom, what for Dad's birthday dinner?" And I went, him, and he started laughing, and he just said, "Oh, I'm going to enjoy sharing this one with people." He said, "I was wondering how long it would take you." Anyway, so I was like, "Okay, what do you want to do for your 50th birthday?" And he said, "You know, I would really love to go on a safari in Africa." And he shared that with the kids, and one of my sons, Ben, who was 14 at the time, said, "You know, Africa is really cool, but wouldn't it be even more cool to climb to the rooftop of Africa?" And he did this whole PowerPoint presentation, complete with all the details of Mount Kilimanjaro, which is at the rooftop of Africa, and it sits at 19,000 feet and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he got us all really excited, and I was bought in and thought, yeah, wouldn't this be a cool thing to do for my husband's 50th birthday? And so I set about, I had the job of all the logistics and managing it all, but it really was, and I have to give Ben a shout out on that, but it really was us just deciding as a family, it would be a really cool thing to do as a family, just to mark and honor my husband's, you know, my kid's dad's 50th birthday. And let me just say, Lisa, that it was actually way harder than we had imagined it would be. It is, I had done some altitude climbing with Andrew, but the kids hadn't done it. I don't think any of them could have known what it is like to be hiking at altitude when you know, you do not get the full quota of oxygen into your lungs. And my youngest at the time, Matt, was 13. And so the younger you are, actually, the harder it can be for your body to adapt to the thinner air. So it was a grueling climb on summit day. I mean, the whole trip was a week of hiking, but summit day was 9 hours to get from base camp at about 18,000 feet up to the top. But we did it very slowly with a lot of breaks, some vomiting. I had a wretched headache. I felt nauseous. And, but yeah, there's something about when you have other people around you who are all working toward, none of us wanted to be the one that gave up. I thought about it multiple times, but I'm like, I don't want to spend the rest of my life with the kids going, "Mom gave up. She said it was too hard." And so we all just lifted each other up, literally sometimes physically, but also just emotionally. You can do it. One more step and we'll have another break. Another 3 steps and we'll have a break. And I think it speaks to the nature of courage. Courage is uncomfortable. Courage is also learnable, but courage is also contagious. And when we dare to do something that's bigger than we've done before, when we dare to risk falling short and failing, it inspires other people around us. It makes it safer for them to raise their sights and to do bigger things and scarier things. And so I just don't think we should ever underestimate the impact we have on others when we decide to be brave with our lives.
It's really beautiful that your family has also been a part of this. And I know you speak about being one of 7 children and raising 4 children and living in Singapore. You've done so many incredible things. And I love the comment you made about the airplane, that in order for the airplane to take off, it takes 25% of the fuel to get in the air. Because I know for a lot of people trying to be courageous, the beginning is so hard. And I really appreciate all the, you know, 50 steps you give people. But I think another thing that's problematic, and maybe you can speak to this if it's universal or worse in the United States, is we don't have a great definition of failure. And in the book, you talk about what failure really is. So maybe you could help people redefine failure as part of the process and not the end.
Yeah, it is part of the process. And let me just say this. The greatest reward we get from acting with courage and being brave in any of the many ways we can be brave is not what we achieve from it. It's not that we had the incredible trip around the world or we climbed to the top of the mountain, because we might not have got to the top of that mountain. There was a strong chance, because you don't always get to choose how badly altitude impacts you, and it can impact very fit people. But it's not about what you achieve, and it's not about whether you fall short and fail when you're trying to do something. It's who you become in the process. And so failing at something shows that you're actually have got the guts to try. And so don't overpersonalize it and make it mean something. Failure is an event. It is not a person. You are not a failure. You just tried something and didn't succeed at it. You put effort towards something and didn't land the desired outcome. Sometimes, actually, we get an even better outcome, though it's not what we think we wanted at the time. But looking back, we can go, I'm really glad that happened, because I wouldn't be who I am now and where I am now had it not been for that failure, that relationship breakup, that job that didn't work out, that business that didn't take off, because I ended up doing something else and I learned something else. And so I just think we have to be so careful in the stories that we tell ourselves, that we are not spinning ourselves a yarn, that we are a failure. No, you tried something, you got result B and you wanted result A. Learn the lessons, mine them for the gold that they hold. Don't kind of go, I don't want to look at it. No, look at it, examine it, do an autopsy on it. What happened? What did I miss? What did I not do? Maybe it was totally out of your control. Maybe something that was seismic in the world was happening. I think of 2020, people who were opening a restaurant in March 2020 or something, right? You know, like it failed maybe because it was just what was going on. You're not a failure. But even if you launched it and it didn't take off, you just didn't know things. You didn't know all the things you needed to know. And now you know more. So take the lessons. Maybe you needed to secure more financing. Maybe you needed to get more stakeholders on board. And you thought that just because you had the best idea, that was enough. No, you needed to get a coalition of other people supporting you. Maybe you needed to manage people differently. Maybe you didn't handle an issue well and it got out of control. Maybe you didn't repair trust when it was damaged and that just had a ripple effect. So I always just think, do not tell yourself a story that you are a failure, and rather just look at the failure for what you can learn from it. And I always say, you know, failure is just another word for, you know, iteration when we're in a business environment. But I always think of the word mistake comes from the Latin, misstep. It's a missed step in a direction where you go, oh, I took a step that direction, didn't get me what I wanted. Okay, I'm gonna change. I'm going to move my step in another direction. Don't keep stepping in the same direction if it's not working, and fall for what's called sunk cost bias, but where we keep doing more of what's not working because we don't want to acknowledge that, hey, this is where I'm on a failed course here. And sometimes we can get caught in that. So, I just think we've got to be so careful in our relationship to failure, how we interpret it, what we make it mean, and how we sometimes wrongly internalize it to be about who we are.
That was really beautiful and helpful. And I love that. I've never heard that about mistake and misstep. That's amazing. I like that. And I do think you speak a lot about, you know, learn the lesson. And I love what you said about, you know, trust your wings and not the branch, that sometimes we learn to fly on the way down. And one of the things right now we're filming in October, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We have all these months now, and you mentioned COVID. So one of the things I loved how you spoke about, there's been a lot of challenges in your family. And you spoke about when you were in Papua New Guinea and got held up, and your loss of your brother and your own personal challenges with food. Like, if someone's feeling very bereft, and a lot of times other people said to me when I was getting divorced, you know, you're so brave. And I really looked that word up in the dictionary because I did not feel brave. That One of the things I'd love if you could speak about is you talked about, you know, don't put yourself in a mental wheelchair, that we sometimes, I guess it's part of how we view failure, but maybe people that already feel very, very stuck, what are some of the maybe helpful steps that they could reach out for? I know you talk about asking for help and dealing with your brother. Like, what can we share with people at this time? How can they do more self-care?
Yeah, I like to, the phrase that I like to use is selffulness. And it's not selfishness and it's not selflessness, which are both two sides of the same coin. They're both dysfunctional and they don't serve us and they do not serve others. But selffulness, and that is filling up your own cup, because others can't drink from an empty cup. You can't give what you don't have. And I've had to work at that. I still have to work at that. I had to work at it a lot more when I had young children at home. And you have to prioritize your children's needs, often in the immediate needs. They need to be fed. Nappies, diapers need to be changed, whatever. You know, like, you've got to put your kids first in the morning when they get up versus, you know, you going off for an hour and a half to do a yoga class because you have children. So I get that there may be people listening to this who go, hey, I've got a whole lot of responsibilities. I can't just go off to a spa when I want it. I can't even afford it. But there's always something you can do that helps to top up your cup. And in doing so, it expands your bandwidth to do everything else better. And I think the heavier the load that we're carrying, the more crucial it is for us to prioritize what empowers us and what helps us bring our best selves to whatever problems and pressures that we're dealing with, and people and problem people. Because when I was a kid, my dad used to take us out in his old rusty tin boat, and sometimes it would spring a leak. And he always said, you know, boats don't sink because of the water around them. They sink because of the water that gets in them. And when you're dealing with a lot of churn and a lot of stormy waves and a lot's going on around you, it's easy to feel like you're going under. Like, it is just so much going on, and you can feel down on yourself, down on life, down on your luck, down on everybody else, treating the people who love you the most the worst. And I think that's where we have to just take whatever amount of time you can take, even if you can say, I can only do 10 minutes in a day, take 10 minutes. If I can just go for a walk around the block and listen to some music, I can go and sit under a tree, I can read something that speaks to my spirit. But I, you know, I wrote about in my book, You've Got This, the importance of having daily rituals and practices. When I say rituals, I'm not talking about going to mass every day. If you're Catholic, though, great. If you can, do it. If that's what your faith system is. I'm talking about the small little things that you do that just help to fill you up physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I feel very passionately about prioritizing those things and how I start my day, because how I start my day sets me up for the day.
Also, one of the things I think you spoke about, how challenging it can be, people with young children. We also see a lot of sandwich generation, you know, people with young children and caring for their elderly parents. And it is very challenging sometimes to ask for help. But one of the other things you spoke about that I think is really important is about forgiveness. And we talked about redefining failure. And I think one of the hardest things for people, for myself included, when I left my marriage, is thinking about how you make a comment about don't carry the past weight into the future, and that we can have a life as big as we dare. And at the end of life, people regret the things they didn't do. But I think this misunderstanding about what does it mean to forgive, that it's not letting someone who harmed you off the hook, but it's about carrying that weight yourself. And I think it's one of the things that really is challenging for people when they're trying to be brave and move forward is, I read once, you cannot drive your car if you only look in the rearview mirror. You can't go forward. And so maybe if you could help us think about how to we redefine forgiveness, that it's much more important for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I've written about forgiveness a lot because I see it causing so much suffering for ourselves. I'm not, you know, it's, as we've heard, it's like drinking a bottle of poison and waiting for the other person to die. So it's not, I think we have to make a distinction between forgiveness and reconciliation, because they're two different things. We might never reconcile with someone, but that doesn't mean we don't let go the anger that we're holding on to. Like, they got their life to forge. They got their conscience to deal with. That's their stuff. But I'm not going to hold on to this in myself because it's eating me from the inside. And so I think forgiveness does begin with forgiving ourselves, forgiving that part of us that may have trusted someone and we shouldn't, forgiving ourselves for what we failed to do, maybe staying in a situation longer than in hindsight we should have, not paying attention to signs, not listening to our gut, continually making excuses for something, turning a blind eye, etc. For our own failings, because none of us are perfect. You know, what is it Jesus said in the Bible? You know, he who among you who, you know, hasn't sinned, throw the first stone. And so we love to throw stones, but, you know, none of us get it right all the time. And so I know myself, sometimes some people are harder to forgive. And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we can hold on to those vindictive thoughts and just be sitting there kind of wishing something bad would happen to someone and serve them right. And I think we have to forgive ourselves for being human too. Like, we're a human. None of us are perfect. We're not all loving all the time. But I think the more we can extend, I think I call it grace, just extend grace to ourselves and extend grace to others, the more it frees our energy to move on and make the most of our lives, to be a person that, one, lifts ourselves and lifts others and isn't bogged down in blame and resentment and bitterness and vindictiveness, etc. And that's our life work. I mean, I look at this as this is the deep work of being a human. It's just the deep human work to be able to continually shed that which keeps us from showing up as the highest, holiest, bravest, best version of who it is we can be. And we are many selves and we have many aspects of who we can be. And so continually peeling off those layers, to quote Anne Lamott, of what keeps us a stranger to the best of who we are.
That was very beautiful. I do think that is incredible goals for ourselves. And you do talk in your books about setting goals. And in my book, I talk about being brave. And so I've been asking people before we finish, and you've shared so many brave challenges, obviously living on multiple continents and climbing the highest mountains. But is there any brave challenge that you want to share with us? Maybe something you've already done or something that you're planning to do next, that's something that's on your list. What challenge are you looking forward to?
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm currently writing my next book, which is in itself a challenge because I want this book to impact people in a way beyond any of my previous books. So that is a challenge. But I'm also looking at what the next season of life holds, in terms of where am I being called to step up in bigger ways in the world beyond what I already have, now that the season of the day in, day out raising of children is past, and I have a strong, I guess, ethos around, you know, to use our gifts for good in the world. And so I'm not sure what that is actually, Lisa, but I'm just sitting with it. And so in a sense, it takes a level of courage sometimes, and this isn't good, I'm not as good at this, to just sit in the questions and in the not knowing and to be patient and wait for the path forward to reveal itself, versus going out and trying to figure out what that path is. But I think sometimes I need to just trust that I'm going to get clarity over time, versus being in the doing, but sitting in a place of being. versus in the doing. So that's a muscle that I have to flex myself and strengthen, is just to be versus to always be doing.
Well, I think that is a good lesson for everyone to think about, being more of a human being than a human doing. And if people want more from you, obviously they can find your books. You have books everywhere, Amazon and on your website. And I know you have the Train the Brave Challenge, but tell people, where can they find you? And what would you recommend if someone is new to your work? What book should they start with, and how can they get more of you?
Thank you. I would invite you to just go over to my website, margiewarrell.com, and I'm guessing you'll put a link at the bottom of this podcast. Thank you. And I have my own Live Brave podcast that you can check out on wherever you listen to podcasts. And finally, yeah, jump onto Amazon, you know, and check out my books. I would recommend looking at You've Got This as a starting point, and or Brave. But if you're feeling really stuck and you just want to reset on a new vision for your life, I'd probably recommend starting with Make Your Mark.
Oh, say that one more time. You cut out for a second. It was the Zoom. So the was Make Your Mark. Is that the one you said?
Yeah. If you're, for people who are feeling stuck and they just want to figure out where to from here, I would suggest going through. It's my guidebook, Make Your Mark, a guidebook for living a brave-hearted life.
Well, you are such an inspiration, Margie. I really appreciate you spending this time with me and my listeners. And I know that I've been working hard on what does it mean to be brave, and your books were really helpful to me. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me onto your podcast.